am queen. And I am a captain. A trap was sprung on my entourage. The token guard cut down before they could lead me to safety. I fought. For all royalty should know how to wield a blade, but I was outmatched. Hopelessly outmatched. A sack over my head. I was bundled over the rear end of a horse like some common saddlebag. Like luggage. Oh, the absurdity would have made me laugh under different circumstances. Never have I ever been made to suffer such an indignity. Yet, that indignity was nothing. Though I am queen, I am not powerful. I am not mighty. The position of queen once wielded great power, great influence, but the noble houses now pull the strings, squabbling amongst each other while fractioning the queendom, breaking it apart bit by bit. The nobles had all the money, all the armies, but I was royalty. I had the lineage, the tradition, the old laws on my side. A figurehead of state could still exert some minor power, but it was through persuasion, cajoling, flattery. But it was still power. I do not know why they came for me, but the captors were there on her orders. She... Even now, the name sends shivers down my spine. Dread Magistrix Urnan. Sorceress. Witch. Warlord. Magic is not an alien concept to me or the realms, but she. She. Her mastery of the arts. Puts the court magicians to shame. They are nothing compared to her power. I met her that very same night for the first time. The cloth over my head had been pulled off, but I was still shaking. Oh, how I shook. My bones rattling after a day's hard ride as luggage. I could scarcely to stand straight. She, Unam. She sat on a throne of carved wood, antlers sprouting from the sides, an ochre haze above her, thin tendrils of incense obscuring her from my view. Oh, how I wish I had never seen her. From her appearance, I thought her a barbarian chieftain. A savage from the west, bent on looting and slaughter. As queen, I summoned all the pride I could. Mustered a royal bearing despite my torn clothes and disheveled hair. You, I began. You know not what you have done. I admit I felt a surge of glee at the thought, hoping to see the regret and panic on her face when I told her. I have no husband. No king yet sits upon the birch seat. But that only means that every duke and baron will come for me. There were none that I favored. No pompous noble had yet to impress me. But now... The first to rescue their queen would assuredly have my hand in marriage. Such are politics. But she... And as she leaned forward, I was struck mute. I was turned to stone. She smiled. Cruel and cold as stone. I count on it. Her skin was as pale as the moon, face framed by hair as dark as night. The nun's features were regal, sleek lines and sharp angles. Not a modern beauty, almost hideous in some ways. So very grim to look upon, but you could not help but look. There was deceit and murder written in her eyes, and oh, such eyes. Her eyes. Charcoal stained so that the white stood out all the more. Deep pits, wells of endless hate, endless malice. They seemed lit with an inner light. A cold blue light that pierced all men, all women. She stood up. Her live body flowing like water. Sauntering towards me with the slithering grace of a snake. The smoke in the tent whirled about her as if caught in currents unseen, dissipating wherever it touched pale skin. She was dressed in scant little, shamelessly showing off flesh, showing off that pale skin. High-heeled boots, untroubled by the uneven footing, continuing up past her knee, climbing halfway up her thighs. A half skirt trailed in her wake, woven in rich purple and gold. Her stomach was bare. Navel piercings catching the flickering torches of the room. A bra of gold and padded with velvet cupped her modest breasts. A choke of the same material and padding adorned her slender. She held a staff in one hand, long and unremarkable. It looked forged out of iron. I fancied that I could see its carvings shift, move and creep over its surface. That very same staff was pointed towards me when we came face to face. She was a head shorter than I was, for the blood in my veins belonged to warrior kings and queens all, but yet, she towered over me. In her presence, under her gaze, I felt small. I felt myself shrink, cowering in a way that I had never before. When she reached out a hand towards me, I slapped it away. I had intended to slap her. She caught my arm by the wrist, gripping it so tight I thought the bones would break. I grunted. I gripped my teeth, pained. Yet she stood there effortlessly. When she raised her hand in return, I expected a brutal blow. But her slender fingers curled about my neck, pulled me forward and down, pulled me into a kiss. My eyes widened. My body was limp. I tried to pull away, but her grip was pure steel. Hard and sure. So very unlike her black lips. Her lips so soft against mine. Hot and wet. Oh, the taste. I could not place the taste. Elderflowers perhaps. Elderflowers and more. I felt her tongue begin to press into my mouth and my senses returned to me. I began to struggle in earnest, panicking at this sudden assault, I was that girl. Sent staggering back in. She let out a soft purr, watching me with a coy smirk. Bitter. I didn't realize that she had meant the taste of me. Not at first. I spat at her feet when I did, trying to regain some of my lost composure, clawing for some sense of who I was. All that I was. My efforts only seemed to amuse her further. Perfectly manicured eyebrows raised in mirth. "Rest," she said. More than just a request. A word of power. My mind fogged over, and I slumped to the ground and remembered. When I awoke, it was to the call of horns. Not one, nor ten, but hundreds. Hundreds, crying in unison. A song of battle that roused my blood. She was there too. Standing over me, I could feel her gaze on my skin. I was propped on pillows, laid out like a whore. A luxury whore, over silks and satins. Still in the same clothes. "Come," she beckoned. And I rose. It was not magic. I am sure it was not magic, but there was compulsion in her voice, and I could not deny it. I followed in her wake, out of the tent, her tent, I noted, and into the camp of her army. For that was what it was. No hired swords, no small bandit hideout. But entire companies on the move. They wore colours that I did not recognise as any of the noble houses. Standards that I had never seen before. Their faces were hidden behind veils. Heads shaved, men and women alike. The ground shook, and as she guided me, I saw why. On the slopes before them was an opposing army. Flying colours that I did recognise. House Durkoff had come, led by the Duke himself. He stood at the head of his knights, their armour polished to a bright sheen. A sheen of hope. But how had they rallied so very quickly? I did not understand. And as if she had read my mind, Unam. A week. I had been asleep for a week, put under by the power of her suggestion by one word. It frightened me. The ease with which she had exercised her power over me. It terrified me. All about me were her troops, silent and serious. House Durkoff's footmen slammed their shields, howled and cursed, working themselves into a battle fury. I could feel it on the air. But her troops were silent. She led me to a great standard, her very own. A golden serpent, rising to strike on a purple background. It stood above all else, drawing the eyes of both friend and foe alike. And there beneath it, she tied me to its base. Hands behind my back, rope biting into my skin. Another rope for my neck. This one finer, to keep me standing straight, chest jutting out. The troops around us pushed away until we stood in a circle. Me and her. I could see the naked lust for blood in her face. The way she looked over the coming field of battle like it was a feast in the making. And she turned to me, turning all of that fierce want my way. And I shivered. The slamming of shields had died down. All House Durkoff watched as the sorceress reached for my clothing. Placing a hand over my riding corset and tore it down. My breast dropped, hanging free, exposed, bare. The cold air whipped and bit my bare skin, made my nipples perk up, made them hard. Offset by the heat that stung my cheeks, I found no voice with which to scream, to shout out my protest. I struggled. Staring with wild eyes at her, chest heaving and sinking as I failed to comprehend even now what she had done. And my gaze turned to look at the opposing army, my would-be rescuers. Their heads were turned my way, every single one, I am sure. I could feel their eyes on me. On my heaving breasts, I tried to hide them. Turning my torso this way and that to deny them, to deny me this unbearable shame. All my efforts did was make them bounce and jiggle and jump. But seeing me tear at the bonds lit a fire under them, and anger that their queen was made to suffer such an indignity. My humiliation was their humiliation. And the Duke could not suffer that stain on his name. They charged, and the drawing of their swords was the glitter of stars in my eyes. Hope leapt in my heart, seeing my saviors come for me, even as I despaired, knowing that the Duke would fall the brute he was and the husband he would make. But both hope and fear were dashed against the ground, trodden underfoot. From my position, I could not see all of the battle. I could not take in the total sum of the events unfolding around me. All I saw was her. The magistrix striding through her ranks to meet the Duke's onslaught head on. And where she walked, death was in her wake. I tried to tear my gaze away from her. I tried to look away, but I found. She wielded her staff with supreme calm, flowed into battle as a dancer would, with poised elegance and endless dignity. It cut through flesh as easily as it did armor, and I know not how. The battle was a storm, and she was at its center, a well of gravity pulling all in towards her. A call heeded. Waves of bloodlust overcame the field. The Duke fell to her, and soon after his banner wavered, fell, and was trampled. A total rout. And as her troops ran after in pursuit, she whirled, turned towards me, Even at this distance, I felt her piercing gaze. I felt her eyes on me. And against the stream of onrushing soldiers, she made her way towards me, parting the flow of bodies, an unmovable rock in a current of blood. She was blood splattered, none of it her own. It was not exhaustion that made her breathe hard. It was arousal. For a moment, I thought she would strike me down as she had so many others. For a moment, I hoped she would. But her staff was discarded, tossed to the side while she took one, two, three steps to... I cried out as sharp, nailed hands dug into my breasts, veritable claws dragging furrows in my flesh. She was showering my throat with kisses, with tiny pecks and bites, growing in ferocity until I feared she'd tear me open, drink fresh from the source, but each time it seemed she was on the verge of going too far. It turned into a long lick, hot tongue tasting my sweat. She was speaking in another language, laughing and cooing words alien to my ears. What little resistance I could offer was immediately rebuffed, rewarded with pinches for my nipples, the scraping of teeth against my collarbone. "The tent," she moaned, as servants, clad head to toe in crimson flowing robes, loosened my binds and half carried, half dragged me back to her quarters. The very moment we both set foot inside, the servants scurried out. And she, taking both of my nipples in firm grips, led me towards her bed. The mass gathering of pillows and covers. I protested, snarled, tried to pull away only to whimper whenever the pressure on my teats became too much, stretched too far. I felt odd. I felt strange. She made me kneel, pushed me down on top of the many pelts and furs, made to turn, lay on my back, looking up at her. She, still bloody, still hungry. Her hair flowed behind her as if it was underwater, and there was a tinge of flush on her cheeks. Her full lips, black as night, were parted ever so slightly. She followed me down, hands on either side of my head, her locks coming down to surround both our heads with a curtain of darkness. Her face was all I could see. And I realized I had not drawn breath since she had laid me down. "Who are you?" I asked, breaking the silence. I could not bear it any longer. She purred in response, leaning in to kiss my forehead, the dark paint of her lips leaving just a faint mark. Had I known it? "My little queen." Her voice was husky, sultry, rough. I shivered. "I have come to stir your tiny pot." There was nothing sweet about her scent. Sour breath, drying blood, and stinking sweat. Yet it was intoxicating. Her hand, which I could not see, was stroking my thigh, wandering up along my leg. I was still dressed in the remains of my riding outfit, levers hugging my curves tight. And so the touch of every finger was felt keenly. The world is an ocean, my little queen, and you, I gasped, felt a palm cup my sex. I hated how I reacted. Like a maiden. Like an innocent. I have had many consorts, not all of which were men, but the way she pressed against me was. You, my little queen, are a piece of flotsam. I writhed, squirmed, but her face came closer until we almost touched. Lost and floating adrift. The pressure on my hidden sex increased, and I tried to move my hips. But I could not. Would not. My mouth was dry, my heart beating so, so fast. And come to me, all wet and dripping. To my shame, I cried out. A shrill whimper in response to her words and the palm massaging my pussy through the fabrics. I knew she could feel it. The heat and warmth of me, and in that moment, I was lost. She was mighty and unashamed. Oh, how I envied her. How I wished that I could have been the same. Powerful beyond belief, taking what she wanted without a care for the opinions of others, or indeed their permission. Battle and death turned her on. The taking of lives erotic, the ultimate expression of supremacy. And now she wanted me for her bed. Who are you? Who are you? I panted again, spreading my limbs out, mind awash with guilt. She leaned down, put her perfect lips next to my ear, her body, lithe but strong, pressing down on mine. Older than nations. I let out a long, outdrawn moan. How could I not? All of my lineage, all of my trappings, both bodily and societal, falling from me like shed skin. I was free, liberated from the notions of shame, of duty, knowing that all I wanted in life was to be used by one such as she. Used for as long as I could be used, such was my hunger. She was ancient, I knew. I felt it in the way she touched me, fingers and lips and tongue and mouth. Unan had more lovers than I had hairs on my body. When she helped me off with my pants, I felt like a young woman again. And I giggled just like one too, reliving the feeling as I never thought I would have had in my mature years. I could not help but lift my hips, heels digging into the carpets, wanting her, needing her to touch me. Run her hand over my mouth, tickle my pussy with the faintest caresses of her fingertips. She watched with amusement as I bucked and thrashed, dancing with her hand just out of reach, teasing and taunted my flustered desperation. Want and lust filled me more fully than any notion of control and dignity ever had. Soul emptied and given a new purpose. I wanted her. I craved her power, her casual disregard for morals and etiquettes. A total disregard for the sanctity of life and order. I was horrified and thrilled, discovering myself anew. So ready to toss aside values I treasured all my grown life for her. Just to be close to her. When she kissed me again, I knew the same black lips were just as capable of shaping the world with naught but words, flattening mountains and raising volcanoes. And I wanted them. I wanted them on my cunt. It was no act of submission to her. She was beyond such petty notions. When she crawled between my legs, it was she who was in control. Just as if I had been between hers. They were smooth and oily, her lips. Slippery and burning hot. My hands dug into the pillows about me. And when that was not enough, it was not enough. I held on to my own breasts. Needing to be touched, forced down to tear and beat and pummel. Pulling and tugging at my own tits while she devoured my pussy. Tongue moving with a mind all of its own. I was but an instrument in her grasp. And she, master musician. Knowing my body more intimately even than I did myself. Finding strings to pluck I never knew even existed. Building up to a crescendo, my needy groans and whimpers filling the tent until it was all that could be heard. Until I was sobbing with the purity of it. And when I thought that I would go mad, that my mind could no longer take it, she pushed me over the edge. Guided me in the orgasmic fall with a sure grip, with mouth and tongue and lips. I shook, cramped, kicked and beat the air. Coming so hard it was agony. White hot pleasure blinding me, tears streaking down my cheeks. Wiped away, immediately replaced. But it did not end. I did not want it to, until I did, and then it was all I wished for. I came and came again. Her laughter was distant, far away. I tried to beg her to stop, to cease, but only could manage a blubbering gurgle. I shrieked as my body contorted in yet another orgasm, as she held me down. Keeping me from hurting myself. Her hand in my pussy, thrusting and stroking, from crushing my puffy clit under steady pressure. And I loved her for it. Howling, I loved her. I declared my everlasting adoration, promising an age of service if only she would keep me by her side. Keep me in her bed, just keep. It was what she had waited for all along. The final confession. I was let go. The sexual torture ending. The crazed orgasm ebbing out, replaced by softness. Replaced by tenderness. I felt my own secretions on her hand when she curled up next to me. Playing with my hair. Playing with my breasts. I was hers. I knew now. I was hers. Forever. I slept. I slept. House Borkas was a sight to behold in their white and green tabards. But I barely paid them any heed. I was tied beneath her standard once more, near naked save for the half-skirt and thong I'd been given. Already my cheeks flushed wet, my heavy breasts on display, my brazen nakedness no longer troubling, but exciting. She had not touched me yet. She knew by now that if she did not, the state I would be in once she returned would be one of fawning worship. And she liked to see that in a queen, I think. Could not help it. I could not help but crave a touch. And I yearned to see her wade out into the turmoil, to slay and sunder. For I knew in turn the state she would be in when she'd had her fill of bloodshed. It made my heart ache with want, my belly flutter with butterflies, my pussy throb with greed. I let out a banshee's wail, knowing it would carry across the field. The queen in distress, they would think. The queen in longing, she would. Hath Borcas let the drums of battle roll? They would be coming for me. But they were already too late. I was already coming.